It is a phase out. If Australia approved no new coal mines starting tomorrow, we'd still be exporting coal in 2040. We've approved mines out to 2040. It's a pretty steady and easy slope down.
G'day and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Australia Institute, and after a brief hiatus for the election, in episode 7 of Follow the Money, we look at the push for a moratorium on new coal mines.
One for mum, one for dad, one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be in Australia.
Dead, buried, cremated.
Australia's basically done for. We'll just end up being a third-rate economy. You know, a banana republic.
Just follow.
Je n'entends pas d'objection. L'accord de Paris pour le climat est accepté.
Late last year in Paris at the United Nations climate change talks, the world collectively agreed to keep global temperatures from rising by more than 1.5 degrees Celsius. Scientists say just to meet the 2 degrees Celsius goal, Australia will have to leave 90% of our coal reserves in the ground. But we've got a big problem. Australia plans to build around 50 new coal mines. So why is there such a disconnect between digging coal and climate change? Talking coal and climate with me today are the Australian Institute's chief economist, Richard Dennis, and our director of research, Rod Campbell.
Well, the world might have agreed to reduce emissions, but Australia's still planning on doubling its coal exports. So one of us is going to be wrong. One of us has got the wrong plan.
Yeah, it's a problem that Australia is particularly keen to get so much bigger because we're already so big. We export an amount of coal to world coal markets that's quite similar to Saudi Arabia's share of the traded oil market. We're the Saudis of coal.
And in recent years, we've seen what happens when Saudi Arabia and oil production rises rapidly, the price of oil falls. If we double our coal exports, we will push the price down. And pushing the price of coal down is the exact opposite of what we want to do if we want to discourage people from burning more coal.
Let's focus specifically on the Galilee Basin. There's plans for Adani's Carmichael mine there, as well as, I think, a dozen or so more other mines in the area. Why is that area so important?
There's been so much focus on the Galilee Basin and Carmichael in particular because it's so damn big. If all of that stuff comes into production, there'll be an extra 300 million tonnes a year of coal going into the Pacific market. But the entire market is only 1,000 million tonnes. So that's a full third expansion of the Asian traded coal market from just these projects. And so Carmichael, it's really the key because if that goes ahead, the railways will be built, the ports will be built, and then all those other projects that no one can really quite raise the money for or the political will for, suddenly it'll be so much easier for them to go ahead. So really, Carmichael's the thin edge of the wedge, and that wedge of the Galilee Basin is pretty damn significant on world coal markets.
I was in a meeting with Pacific Island Forum countries where Australia and New Zealand are also members, and we had an argument. Because they were arguing that to cut emissions, it would be something that they're unable to do because it would affect the industries. And so here I was saying, okay, I hear you. I understand what you're saying, but try also to understand what I'm saying, because if you do not cut your emissions, then our survival is on the line.
The former president of Kiribati, Anoti Tong, has raised the call for a moratorium on new coal mines. He's got the backing of 11 other Pacific Island leaders, eminent scientists, economists like Nicola Stern, and the former Reserve Bank of Australia Governor, Bernie Fraser. This modest proposal would allow existing coal mines to keep producing, but means no new mines would be built and no expansions to existing mines would be allowed. Yet strangely, there's little talk on the supply side of the equation at international climate talks, with absolutely zero mentions of coal in any of the official communiques.
If we were to introduce a moratorium on coal mines tomorrow, that would actually be good news for workers in existing coal mines. It'd be good news for the owners of existing coal mines, because these enormous new coal mines are actually going to push down the price of coal.
So if you've already been in the industry for a while, you're at an older mine and this new one comes into production, basically, well, it's a threat to your job and your mine?
Absolutely a threat.
And it's important to note that it is a phase-out. If Australia approved no new coal mines starting tomorrow, we'd still be exporting coal in 2040. We've approved mines out to 2040. It's a pretty steady and easy slope down.
The Barrier Reef is facing one of the most serious challenges to its continued existence.
Earlier this year, the legendary naturalist Sir David Attenborough warned that the Great Barrier Reef was seriously threatened by warming temperatures. Just a few weeks later, the reef suffered its worst bleaching event ever.
Do we really care so little about the Earth on which we live that we don't wish to protect one of its greatest wonders from the consequences of our behaviour?
But nobody seems to connect that at all. There's a disconnect between what's happening on the reef to one of our biggest tourism industries and our coal export plans and Carmichael Mine, which is just down the road from the reef, effectively.
Well, I think it comes back to the favourite line of the Australian coal industry, of if we don't dig it up, someone else will. But what I like to do is take the logic of that backwards. If we do dig it up, someone else won't. If we build a mine, Indonesia will decide not to. Why would they do that? If the price is the same, they'll still build their mine and put more coal into the market, pushing the price down.
We're in this ridiculous situation where we're saying, oh, us exporting coal doesn't cause climate change. Us exporting coal doesn't bleach the reef. It's other people burning the coal we sold them that causes climate change.
Yeah.
It's other people burning the coal we sold them that harms our reef. You can't blame us for that.
Yeah.
That's their fault. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Let's go and plant some opium poppies. Wouldn't be our fault.
Wouldn't be our fault. Someone turned it into heroin. Who'd have thought?
Richard made a comment about no more coal mines. Well, you know what? What he means is no new coal mines in Australia, because global demand for coal is still going through the roof.
That's what.
When you sit there and say you're going to save the reef, what you're actually saying is you don't want an Australia.
The Minister for Trade, Steve Chobo, told the ABC's Q&A program that the demand for coal is going through the roof. But he's wrong. The International Energy Agency report for 2015 found that the global growth in demand for coal has halted and it's in structural decline. And in the United States, the coal giant Peabody has filed for bankruptcy protection. So, how would a moratorium on new mines affect the industry?
The prospects for coal are not rosy. In an oversupplied market where coal mines are already going broke, where the world is moving rapidly towards more ambitious climate action, building enormous new coal mines now is about the riskiest, dumbest thing we could do. Because for the mines up near the Great Barrier Reef, for example, we might wind up doing all of the environmental harm of building a new enormous new mines and get none of the economic benefits if we can't sell the coal.
Rod, you've done some research into the state subsidies to coal in Queensland in particular. Do you want to talk us through that?
Between 2008 and 2014, the Queensland government put about $7 billion into building new railway lines for coal. They get some money back when the coal miners use that. It's not a cut and dried $7 billion loss, but all of that money could have been used to build schools and hospitals or to address other issues relating to the reef. So there's been a huge amount of assistance given to the coal industry by state and federal governments, summed up perfectly by Campbell Newman and Jeff Seeney wanting to give $500 million to build a railway line to the Carmichael mine. You know, aside from the coal mine, it is the classic railway to nothing.
And of course, if building the railway line was such a good idea, you'd think the private sector would do it.
Yeah, mining companies don't seem short of cash.
That's right. But as Rod said, actually, it's a leech. It requires a huge amount from the rest of us. So much so that the Queensland government gets more revenue from parking fines and car registrations than it does from royalties from the coal industry. So if you've ever paid a parking fine or if you've ever registered a car, call yourself the backbone of the budget.
A full 3% of its revenues come from coal royalties. So, you know, 97% of your schools, hospitals and roads in Queensland get bought by the rest of the economy and then take out another slug for what we've given to the coal industry. The idea that they're the engine room or a pillar of the Queensland economy is quite frankly sick.
Sorry, you said slug. I was calling them a leech.
Oh, they're all monogastropods.
Without a backbone.
They're certainly all invertebrates.
So, what would actually happen if Australia implemented a moratorium on new coal mines? Well, it turns out almost nothing. In the year 2040, our gross domestic product would be about 0.6% lower. The value of our exports would be 1% lower, and unemployment would be affected by 0.008%. That's the estimate from the first detailed attempt to model a phase-out of the coal industry in Australia. Together with the Centre of Policy Studies at Victoria University, the Australia Institute looked at forecasts of future coal production, worked out how much coal production has already been approved, and we modelled the difference to the economy if we just stopped approving new mines and major expansions to existing mines. The difference to the economy is very small for several reasons. Firstly, the coal industry is small in Australia. It employs only 0.4% of the Australian workforce and makes up only 1.2% of GDP. Secondly, the phase-out would be slow, and New South Wales and Queensland have already given the green light for hundreds of millions of tonnes of coal production for decades to come.
The point is, you know, coal is an important sector in Australia, but the global picture about coal is it will remain important, but it's of a declining share of the overall energy mix.
Australia now has a new Environment Minister, Josh Frydenberg, who's also the Energy Minister. So interestingly, he's now straddling both sides of the fence here. Yet his first comments since taking the job, he admits that it's inevitable Australia will transition away from coal.
And people talk about a transition away from fossil fuels.
Mm.
Well, there's no transition until you stop building new ones. It's meaningless to talk about 100% renewable energy, for example, while we're still building new coal mines. It's impossible to conceive of what a just transition for coal workers is when we're still transitioning new people into new coal mines. So if we're going to transition away from fossil fuels, by definition, we need to stop building new ones.
Yeah.
It's hardly a radical call.
No, it seems like the first thing you would do, in fact.
The time has now come for a paradigm shift in embracing solar technology. And who could be better poised than the conventional energy companies like Adani to adopt and exploit this clean, abundant energy?
The other, I think, very weird argument that crops up all the time in the Australian debate is that somehow our coal exports are going to solve energy poverty for Indians, for example.
Electricity companies don't just give away their electricity to poor people because they're nice. They sell it to the people who'll pay the most for it. Every time there's an energy poverty project, a project that actually aims to give poor people electricity, they don't use coal. In fact, as we put in a report from last year, you can go through all the corporate social responsibility activities of all the coal companies you can name, and some of them do contribute to energy poverty projects. None of them use coal. Let me say it again. When coal companies are trying to contribute to energy poverty, they don't use coal. Adani give out solar-powered streetlights.
Been episode 7 of Follow the Money, brought to you by the Australia Institute. You can subscribe on iTunes or find previous episodes on the Australia Institute website at tai.org.au/podcasts. Richard Dennis's book Econobabble is available now from redbackquarterly.com.au, or you can find it on Amazon and in all good bookshops. You can follow Richard on Twitter at RDNS_TAI. You can find Rod's papers on the Institute's website or follow him at R_O_D_C. This episode was produced by Jennifer Macy. You can find her at Jennifer Macy, M-A-C-E-Y. And you can follow me at Ebony_Bennett. That's with a double N double T. The Australia Institute is on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an A-U-S. And Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum composed our title track. You can find more of his music at pulseandthrum.com. Thanks for listening.